Blog Talk Radio.
Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. And it is, of course, not Sunday night. It's actually Wednesday evening. And I am here on location in beautiful Las Vegas. Well, I guess it's beautiful. It's a little overcast outside and actually a little cool. So Vegas in May has been extremely good to me. So last night I had a chance to have dinner, or actually dessert, with one of our listeners, Jeff Thompson, and his lovely wife, Wendy. They gave me a Jose Altuve bobblehead, and I'm staring at it as it's sitting on the desk in my room and totally excited to put it on my mantle when I get home. My pride, want to be one of my pride and joys. So thank you, Jeff. So I'll try to tweet out more where I'm going to be, and hopefully we can have more hookups with listeners as well. This is, of course, a Wednesday evening podcast, and I've just got a sliver of time here before I have to go bowling. I'm at a corporate event, and the corporate event is at Brooklyn Bowl, so I can only imagine what bowling is going to be like in Las Vegas. I know in Reno, I think Reno is like the bowling capital of the world, so that's where all those... I remember when I was a kid, some guy named Anthony was a really good bowler. Everything he threw, the ball curved in and knocked down all the pins. So I don't know if Las Vegas is big into bowling or not, or it's just Reno, or the whole state of Nevada is big into bowling, but I'll let everybody know. I'm assuming it's going to be a wild event because I'm here with a bunch of salespeople, so no telling what we'll have. One disappointing thing I will tell you about Las Vegas, and I found this out last night after dinner, came back to the room, wanted to watch the end of a couple of baseball games, and I mentioned this last week when I was in Philadelphia. MLB.TV blacks out in the state of Nevada, at least in Las Vegas, every California team. I couldn't watch Oakland and Houston. I couldn't watch, I think it was whoever was playing the Cubs. I forgot who was playing the Cubs. I couldn't watch that game. I couldn't watch Toronto and Los Angeles. I couldn't watch any California-based team. How can they co-op every California team and say it's a home market? I don't even understand that. It was Northern and Southern California. So that's MLB.TV, shame on you. You got to do something about that. I mean, I would pay extra if I could eliminate all of the blackouts. And I know people have said, well, you can go through VPN, or you could do download something on Chrome and it unblock it. But I use the MLB app and nothing seems to work. It's just, I'm just screwed. So anyway, I don't know why, if you're ever in Las Vegas and want to catch a game, I guess you got to go down to the sports bar and catch the games. Like, all of them are down there, but I was too lazy to get out of my comfort of my room to kind of go down there. Last week we talked about pitchers and those pitchers who might be getting a little unlucky, and those pitchers who've been really lucky, maybe looking for a little regression. And I got to tell you, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And I think I got a little lucky last week as I brought up Corey Kluber is a guy that was going to definitely have a chance to turn up a notch. And he's had two remarkable performances since we talked about him last Wednesday, including, I think it was Wednesday night as I was talking, it was an 18 strikeout outing that he had. Clay Buchholz is another guy that we talked about that had an 8-inning, 3 or 4 hit, 6 strikeout outing. So there was a number of guys who fell onto that list that after I did the analysis, it said, hey, I think these guys are due for a turnaround or due for some regression. So hopefully you got a chance to make some moves and get some benefit out of last week's podcast. This week, again, I'm all by myself, and I did mention last week a lot about batting average of balls in play, otherwise known as BABIP. And I mentioned that a lot, and a couple of listeners tweeted at me and actually wrote on my site, like, what the heck is BABIT? And I've heard the name. I really don't understand it. Some other people said, isn't that just a luck factor? And it was actually somebody tweeted me an article. I guess he had a demon looking through Twitter feeds and saw me talk about Anthony Ghost and his high BABIT. And he wrote tweeted at me that he had actually written an article. And it was a ridiculous article about BABIT and he used to watch baseball with his father and BABIT's a bunch of hooey and all these advanced statistics are a bunch of hooey. It's all about gut and grit and instincts. And I'm like, I didn't even respond back to him because it was a troll basically looking for me to respond. And I didn't want to give the guy any publicity because the article was completely ridiculous. Advanced statistics, in my humble opinion, is here. It's here to stay. Analytics runs the world now, whether you are a quant guy in the investment community and looking to invest in stocks and bonds and trying to look for trends and so forth. The whole stock market is traded through analytics. And, you know, there's very few people, individual investors are buying IBM or Microsoft or Google, Facebook or whatever. I guess I throw in some non-technology companies, American Airlines, et cetera, Salesforce.com, whatever you want. They're buying individuals, but the high percentage, well over 90%, are all done through institutional traders. That most of that stuff is done through things that go up by a certain percentage and all kinds of models that they've built. So a big part of our financial community runs off analytics. Think about your car. I was thinking the other day when I originally learned to drive a car, it was a stick shift and manual steering. And thinking now that when I just bought my daughter a car, I mean, it's hard to buy a manual transmission unless you get a sports car, and you can't buy a car, I think, with out power steering. My car was a Chevy Chevette, so it was by far not a sports car, but that's just what you bought. You got cars that had non-technology in it, and somewhere about 15 years ago, they added ABS to the cars. And remember, it was a premium, just like automatic transmission was a premium at one point. Power steering was a premium. Now ABS is standard with all cars. And I bring up ABS to say that that's really an analytic. Think about it. As your car is starting to skid, the sensors pick that up, and the anti-locking brake system starts to engage and starts to course correct what's going on. That is an analytic. So to simply have that in everyday lives, your everyday living, and not to have it in baseball is foolhardy. So there are people that have been working on this for years, and those models continue to change. And one of the things that's probably the easiest to understand, and actually one of the more helpful things with fantasy baseball, particularly early in the season, is something called batting average of balls in play. And essentially, it is an average of all balls that are actually hit in play. So you take a person's at-bats, you take away home runs, you take away sacrifice flies, I believe, and you get the denominator of how many times they actually were at bat. And then the numerator is the number of balls that were actually put in play, and then you get an average of the number of hits that you got out of that. Now, if you've got a really high batting average of balls in play, that usually means clearly that a lot of balls are going in play, but is that acceptable? Is that make a lot of sense? Does a batter have control over how many balls they can put in play, how many hits they can get? And that's open for debate. So first of all, using analytics, you have to know that the average on an annual basis across the league is 290 to 310, about there in terms of everybody's batting average of balls in play. So over the course of a year, over the course of several years, you put all those numbers together, most players, the average player will have a batting average around 290, 300, something like that. So if using that as a bogey, anything above that would be considered a positive from a batting average of balls in play. Anything below that, it's obviously a negative. But we also have learned through a lot of statistical gathering that there are certain players who have great hand-eye coordination, speed, or hit the ball very, very hard and are naturally going to have a lot more base hits just because they have a superior hit tool. Derek Jeter and Ichiro, during their heydays, had tremendous batting average of balls in play. Both of them were in the 340s. So they were well over an average batting average of balls in play. That's why both of them were career 300 hitters, because in essence, you know, a lot of things considered, you know, an average hitter is going to be 250 to 260, and they'll have a batting average of balls in play about 30% higher. If you start to work out the math, you'll see that. So there's a lot of things we're looking at an average of balls in play. You take a look at the average, and then you take a look at the historical average of a player and where they are in relationship to what their current BABIP is. And when you do that early in the year, you see very small sample sizes, and things haven't started to regress out to see what the averages are. So you can use that to start buying low on players or selling high on players. And we're going to go through some of those players now. But hopefully that level of batting average of balls in play makes some sense. Again, it is an average. It's a statistic that is out. A batter can control his batting average of balls in play with speed to get on the little base hits here and there, and beating out infield grounders gets you more hits, drives your batting average up, drives your batting average of balls in play up. If you just hit the ball harder, again, like a Mike Trout who has crazy exit velocity off of his bat, he's naturally going to get the ball through holes a little bit more. So you can see him having a higher batting average of balls in play. On the reverse, you take a Mark Teixeira type of player, he's always going to have a low batting average of balls in play because A, he's slow, and B, guess what? And this is something new that's happening. With all these shifts happening, he's always hitting into the shift. So his natural batting average of balls in play is going to be a lot lower than the average. So you have to take a look at all of that and then start to make some judgments on whether people are getting lucky or people really starting to turn things around. So let's take a look at some of these players. And I've got some players that have low batting average of balls in plays, which means that they look like they have a potential for some upside. And then guys who have crazy high batting average of balls in play are looking for a major regression. Hopefully the audio is coming out well. I am on my laptop on a wireless network in a hotel, and a lot of things can make this thing go awry. The first guy, the obvious guy, is Chase Utley. He's got an average of 143, which is going way up since a couple of weeks ago. I think when we talked about him, I might have talked about him last week. He's got a batting average of balls in play of 141. His history, his career average is 301. So there's clearly a ton of upside. If you take a look, he's got a 14.8 strikeout rate, which is great. Anything around 15% or below is considered very, very good, if not elite. You start to get in the single digits, and you're talking Jose Altuve-ish type of category. And he's also got a walk rate of 14.8, which is very elite. Anything in the double digits is a guy who's got great plate discipline. So batting average all balls in play, strikeouts play a big role in that, because think about it. If you strike out more, so he's been up 135 plate appearances. If he were striking out 30% of the time, that means that, what is that? 30% of the time would be almost 40 times that he doesn't even get a chance to hit the ball. So his denominator is going to get smaller, which means that there's such a greater variance for his batting average of balls in play. So the more chances, the less you strike out, the more chances you have just to hit the ball and get the ball in play and actually drive your batting average up and actually drive your batting average of balls in play. So it's really important when you're analyzing all that to look at strikeout rates and walk rates. Chase Utley has to improve. Yeah, he is. I don't know how old he is. I actually don't have this on this list, but I mean, he's ancient. So you have to figure that 301 batting average of balls in play is not gonna last, but he's not playing full time. I doubt he's going to get traded because he's the face of the Phillies. But there is serious upside with Chase Utley. He's got 3 home runs, 1 stolen base. You know, I think he could finish with 15 to 20 home runs and a much higher average. Remember, we're a quarter of the way through the season. So if he ends up batting 250, that means he's probably going to hit 300 the rest of the way. Might be a nice buy low candidate. Evan Gattis, interesting guy, 7 home runs. You buy him for the power. He's batting 183. So people are, he was one of the guys listed last week. We did bat to the bone. He's killing you. He's got a batting average of balls in play of 187 on a career average of 264. So there is some upside there, but it's not crazy upside. So you can see a guy who's going to probably bat 220 to 240 for the season, hit 30 home runs. But to get the 220 to 240, he's probably going to hit 260 the rest of the way. So there's definitely some upside in Avangadis, plus you're going to get all of the power to boot. Mike Napoli is another guy that is sitting at an average of 162. Wow, didn't realize how bad he was doing. Batting average of 190, so clearly a lot of upside there. His career batting average of balls in play is 307. Now, it's interesting. Over the winter, I think he had that surgery that relieves where you have trouble breathing at night when you're sleeping and you have to wear the mask and things like that. The name escapes me, sleep apnea. So I think everybody was hoping that that would have some uptick in his performance. It hasn't been that way, but he's clearly getting a little unlucky. If we take a look at his strikeout rate, a little high at 22.4. So again, you know, there's, you know, you strike out more, you're not going to get a chance to get as many base hits, and obviously going to have a potentially a lower BABIP. But I think there's definitely upside there. Three home runs, I think, you know, he's probably a 15 to 20 home run guy at this point. But, you know, I think Mike Napoli is a guy that you might be going out and targeting. Dustin Ackley. Tim talked about him last week in Bad to the Bone. He got off to a scorching hot streak and then has been cold as ice. And it's interesting, if we take a look at it, he's a very aggressive hitter, only walking 3.9% of the time. And that's the problem with Dustin Ackley. If you're up, you want to be aggressive as a hitter. And the reason you want to be aggressive is something else that, you know, if you learn from a scouting standpoint. If you're passive, Jackie Bradley Jr. last year was a great, great example of that. He would not swing at the first pitch. So pitchers quickly found that out. Strike one. They would always throw him strike one. You're down 0-1. They go, okay, now what are you going to do? Then you throw him a really good pitch, but you still make it a strike. And now it more than likely you're going to be down 0-2. And then you've got to shorten up your swing. And bad stuff happens when you get to 0-2 or 1-2. And that's when you're too passive of a hitter. That can happen. So you want to be aggressive up there like Dustin Ackley, but you want to walk more than 4% of the time. That means you're literally a guy's up there. He's just hacking away. He sees anything, he's going to be swinging, which then what will happen? A pitcher will know that. And again, organizations are sitting there with the same list I have and even more advanced statistics. And they're going, don't give Dustin Ackley really anything to hit, particularly early in the count, because he's going to swing at everything. We saw this with Chris Davis, K-H-R-I-S Davis, last year with Milwaukee. He wasn't walking at all, and they were throwing him junk, and he was swinging at everything. What's made him a better hitter this year? I know he's not a great batting average, but, you know, there's due for, I think, some upside there, is that he's been more patient at the plate. So he's trying to find that blend, and that's what batters are always trying to find. He does have a very good strikeout rate at 15.5. I think there's upside. 189 average, a 192 batting average of balls in play, and a career average of 283. Tim said it best last year. Ackley was a great second half player last year. I think as long as they keep him in that role, I think he has a chance for some upside. And I got to tell you, Seattle's got to do something. They spent too much money for that team to be that bad. And Taijuan Walker, we talked about it last week. It was a sucker two-pitch, two-start week this week. And he got crushed yesterday against Baltimore. And he's got Toronto at the end of the week. He didn't even make it out of the fourth inning. So I don't see how the Mariners can continue to roll him out. I mean, he's got an ERA now above 8. Yeah, we could talk about regression and all that. It's probably, if you took a look at all the advanced statistics, it's probably sitting at more of a 5, but he's just not getting it done. That short stride is brutal. He's got great stuff, but the command is just not there, and he's just leaving the ball over the middle of the plate. People are crushing it. And then he's having trouble throwing strikes, and I think he's got some mechanical problems that he needs to work out. And what I do worry about is it all stems back from that short stride, that he needs to get more length in there. His ball will start to explode. The guy's too athletic to just ride off, but boy, they can't continue to throw that guy out there. We digress, or I digress. Let's move on to some other names. Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy Rollins has been brutal. A lot of people said he's been one of the guys who should be bad to the bone. But if you take a look at strikeout rate of 17.4, which is okay, 10.3 walk rate, all that looks good. He's got four home runs, which you like. The average is 196. The batting average of 213 with a career average of 285. Folks, Jimmy Rollins will have a better second half of the year. Again, he is an older player, so don't expect, you know, miracles. But I think a guy that potentially could hit close to 300 the rest of the way with a little bit of pop. Jay Bruce is a guy I brought up a bat to the bone. This is a little ugly here. So he's got a career 290 batting average of balls in play. Average of 190, but a batting average of balls in play of 213. There's correction there, but it ain't a whole lot of correction. And part of it is his strikeout rate is 27.6. He does walk very well at 12.4. I think there's definitely correction and upside with Jay Bruce, but I'm not sure it'd be a guy I'd be running out to grab because striking out a ton. And you put that together with a 285, which is below, or 290, which is at a lower end of a batting average of balls in play. I think you're seeing a Babbitt going down long term and a guy who's really going to struggle to hit 250. So he could wind up with a batting average this year around 220. And I think what's going to happen is all his production is going to go down. He might get you 20 to 25 home runs, but they'll be very expensive 20 to 25 home runs. Chris Carter, about this time last year, I did a very similar podcast and discussion, and Chris Carter was on my list of a guy who is going to turn it around. It's the same this year. He's going to turn it around, folks. Batting 160 with a 219 batting average of balls in play. He does have 6 home runs. I think he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs. I think he's going to bat 220 to 240 when it's all said and done. It's going to be better than what we've seen. We saw it last year. He hits the ball very hard. The exit velocity is good. So he should get a little bit of a bump. Would I be going out and trading for him? Yeah, but you'd probably be able to pick him off the waiver wire because he's, again, expensive home runs. The last two guys are younger players, and we don't know a whole lot about these two guys. But one in particular I would be running out to get, and that is one young Mookie Betts. Looking across both, actually last year, I actually ignored all of his minor league stats. And by the way, you really can't use Babbitt in the lower minors at all. Because if you don't have a batting average of balls in play of around 350, 360, you don't have much of a hit tool. Because what's going to happen, you should be able to hit the kind of velocity that people in low A and high A can throw. Should have enough bat control to get a lot of base hits. So throw Babbitt out until you get to the upper minors, and you can even throw it out there. It's not really till the majors when you can use Babbitt as a controller. But Mookie Betts last year, limited, granted, 327. He's got a Babbitt this year of 226 and a batting average of 221. I think there is huge upside with Mookie Betts. He's got 5 home runs and 5 stolen bases, 13.7 strikeout rate, and 8.3 walk rate. I wish the walk rate was a little higher, but we've seen it in the minor leagues, really good plate discipline. I think it's all there, particularly if you're in a keeper league or a dynasty league. Mookie Betts is going to be money. That batting average is going to go up. I would not be surprised if he hits 300 the rest of the way and ends the year with a 270 to 280 batting average. Remember, quarter of the year is gone, so look, do the math. If you're going to bat 300 from 220, let's call it, so you're going to get a lift of at least 70 three quarters of that. Of those numbers. So it's definitely something that I think is there for Mookie Betts. The other guy is George Springer. 6 home runs, 10 stolen bases, which you love. Here's the problem. Striking out 28% of the time. He's walking a ton at 16.8. Average is 188. Batting average of balls in play is 219. His career batting average of balls in play, even in the minor leagues, was only 294. So as I've said, and I'll say it again, George Springer is a 230 to 260 batter. He might even get a little bump on the 260 if he can have a higher batting average of balls in play during a certain year. But that's essentially going to be the guy. He's going to hit you 20 to 25 home runs, potentially steal 20 to 25 bases, maybe a little bit more. And he's going to have a 230 to 240 batting average. That was Chris Young in his heyday. And if that's the kind of player you want, particularly in a points league where batting average is not there, he's money. If you got him in a rotisserie league and it's about batting average, he's going to hurt you there. His on-base percentage is always going to be pretty good because he does walk a lot. And his on-base percentage is actually 290. So assuming he gets a bump, I'm sorry, it's not 290. Where is he? It's 322. So that's on a 188 batting average. So let's say that, you know, he winds the year up at 230. I mean, that's a 372 on-base percentage, which is pretty darn good. And with all the home runs and stolen bases. So the only league that he really hurts you in is in a rotisserie league. So think about that when you're at the draft table next year about George Springer, and think about that the rest of this year and whether he's a guy you should be trying to get on your team. I think he is. I think there's a lot to like about George Springer. So those are the guys that are doing really well. The guys who are not and looking for a regression, this is even a more fun list. The first guy is Anthony Gose. This is crazy. I haven't seen this in a long, long time. 115 plate appearances, a 30.4% strikeout rate. That is crazy. On 115 plate appearances, he struck out 30% of the time. That's a contact rate in the low 60s, maybe in the high 50s if I were to do the math. He's got one home run, seven stolen bases. He liked the stolen bases. He's not walking very much at all at 6.1. He's got an average of 336. He's got a BABIP of 493. So you take out the strikeouts, which is a lot. So let's say 30 on 115 is about 35 strikeouts. So you knock that down from 115 to 90. Is that right? Yeah, to 90. No, to 80. So out of the 80 times he's actually hit the ball, almost half of those times the ball has landed for a hit. That ain't going to continue. And in fact, well, his lifetime average is 352, which is pretty good. I don't think that's sustainable either. But let's say it's around 340. You're talking that average could go down to the Mendoza line very, very quickly. So he could be one of those guys that goes 1 for 25 over the next 26 at bats. Very easy to do that and strike out half the time. That's Anthony Gose. It is danger Will Robinson. I would be selling so high on Anthony Gose, it's not even funny. D. Gordon is the next guy with a crazy 457 batting average of balls in play. Now, he's also batting 406. I doubt he's going to bat 400. However, there's a lot to like about D. Gordon. First of all, the strikeout rate is 11.4, so you like that. He is really aggressive, but he's got speed to burn. It doesn't hit the ball very well, but he's going to beat out a lot of infield hits. So that lifetime 342 batting average of balls in play, that's probably legit. So that 406 might go down to 320, 330, but he's a 300 hitter, and he's probably going to be a 300 hitter for quite a while. So think about the draft table next year, a guy that gets you 30 to 40, 50 stolen bases, who can bat 300, score a lot of runs, and a fairly good Miami lineup, that's a really, really good player. Not quite Jose Altuve, but it's getting there because D. Gordon, again, doesn't have any power at all. So there's going to be regression in the batting average, and it might hurt you a little bit because he might bat 300 the rest of the way, but D. Gordon is money and should not be traded. You should not be looking at the 357 batting average of balls in play. Oh, he's going to regress. I got to get rid of him. Not true. He's going to regress some, but there's still too much to like there. And the math will say that he might bat 300 the rest of the way, which is still going to be one of the best batting averages you'll see in the league. I'm sorry to say that the third guy, and I sorted this, went to Fangraphs, I put in 100 plate appearances, and the third guy on the list is none other than Brandon Belt. I checked the numbers, and this is scary. He's got a 434 BABIP, and he's been terrible. But he's somehow batting 321, probably because he's been very good over the last 2 weeks. Of course, he's got the 13 home runs. He's walking at walk rate of really, really good at 9.6. The strikeout rate's high at 26.4. He's always kind of struck out a lot, and has always had a low 70s contact rate. I'm sorry to say that Brandon Belt's going to regress. That 392 on-base percentage and the 321 average, he does have a career 338 batting average of balls in play. So if we shift that whole thing down, he's probably going to end the year at 250 to 260 with a on-base percentage of probably 340. That's just the kind of player he is. I do think he'll hit you 20 home runs. But I don't think Brandon Belt is a sell high, because I don't think anybody's gonna be buying on it, because he was so horrible until about 2 weeks ago. But somehow his average grew up to 321. Timmy's buddy, Avisal Garcia, 141 plate appearances, 5% walk rate, which stinks, 21.3% strikeout rate, which stinks, 338 batting average, folks, and a 414 batting average of balls in play. You're talking about major regression here with Avisal Garcia. His lifetime is a 315 BABIP, so I think he could very easily end the year at 240 to 260 batting average, and seeing his production go down along with that. Avisal Garcia, in my humble opinion, is a sell high candidate. Another guy who appears on the surface to be a sell high, he probably is, but maybe not as much as you think, and that is Jimmy Paredes. Five home runs and one stolen base. Very aggressive hitter, only 4.8 walks per nine. 19.2% strikeout rate, which is high, but it's except, and his average is 343, but his BABIP is 392. So there's definitely some correction there, but he could very easily end the year at 280 to 290. So a 270 hitter the rest of the way is probably reasonable. And if he can continue the power, I mean, he is a sell high candidate just because he's never done this before. But it's not like a crazy, like, oh my gosh, this guy is going to be terrible the rest of the year. I don't think so, based on the stats that I'm looking at. So he will correct, but I think enough that you probably want to hold on to him. Is he a buy high candidate? Perhaps, because it might not take a whole lot to get Jimmy Paredes, that somebody might say, gee, well, he's Jimmy Paredes, he's going to stink at the end. So you might want to try to wedge him out with maybe a Chase Utley, or talk about Chase Utley, turning it around, or even Jimmy or J-Roll turning it around, and maybe try to get Jimmy Paredes. That might be kind of interesting. I've also highlighted Matt Holliday. It's interesting. Matt Holliday is batting 320. His batting average is really high at 384. His BABIP, though, is 339, not quite as high over the last couple of years after he lost some speed. What is disconcerting is his three home runs. So are we seeing Matt Holliday, the power going? He's an older player, so the power is not there. We know he's very outspoken about not taking PED, so I'm assuming he's not a PED guy. So I don't think there is some regression in the batting average, but I don't think it's that bad. I think he'll probably end the year as a 280, 290 hitter. I do worry about the power a little bit, and that's my only concern with Matt Holliday. 17.2 strikeout rate, a 16.6 walk rate. All that would indicate that there's a really good chance that, you know, that 280, 290 batting average is going to be at the end of the year. So I like Matt Holliday a lot. If you're looking for 25 home runs, not going to happen. If you're looking for 20 home runs, that's probably the over-under, and it could be the slightly under. The last two guys I'm going to talk about as potential sell-high candidates, I'm not sure what to do. They're both Chicago Cubs. The first one is Chris Bryant. The second one is Jorge Soler. We have no history of either one of them in the major leagues. Well, a little bit from Jorge Soler. But Chris Bryant is batting, Chris Bryant is batting 291, which is good. He, of course, has the four home runs. He's striking out 30% of the time. He's walking 18% of the time. He's being extremely passive. He's changed that around over the last week or 10 days. But his BABIP is 426. Now, if you start to normalize all of this without thinking about the player at all, this guy's going to hit below 200 by the end of the year, statistically. What we do know is that Chris Bryant is a special talent. He hits the ball extremely hard. I've looked at some of his exit velocity, particularly in his home runs. I mean, they're crazy. He's got really good back control. The guy is a really, really good hitter. We know the makeup is off the charts. So I think he's going to be a guy that could hit with a 320, 330, maybe in a 340 batting average of balls in play. But he's got to cut down on that strikeout rate a little bit because otherwise, I mean, 250 is going to be a struggle for him. So you could see a guy that ends the year at 240, 245 with, 20 to 25 home runs. That could be the guy that Chris Bryant is in the end this year, unless that strikeout rate starts to adjust, because we're going to start to see some regression. Again, You can't sustain a 426 BABIP. I don't care if you're Derek Jeter or Ichiro or anybody. You just can't do it. And starting off, all these other guys at least started off with a batting average well in the 300s. I mean, if you take a look at Anthony Gose, he had a batting average at least a batting average of 336. So at least that's something to start with. Chris Bryant does. He's at 291. So it could go down. It could go down in a hurry. So just be careful there. Jorge Soler is a very similar kind of guy. Even worst case, 273 average, 409 batting average of balls in play. His strikeout rate, believe it or not, is even worse than Chris Bryant's at 33%. And the walk rate's a lot worse than that. So he could be due even a greater correction than Chris Bryant. Again, another guy that hits the ball really hard, doesn't have quite the speed that Chris Bryant does. But a guy I think that's really, really struggling. And for redraft leagues, I would keep Chris Bryant unless I could get a fortune for him, which that's up to you. I mean, it's a dicey, he's the name, he could really explode, but if you can get a really, really good player for Chris Bryant, you might want to think about moving him. I would definitely be trying to move Jorge Soler. I know he's only got the 3 home runs. I know he's a massive man, 6'4", and looks like a truck out there. But everything I'm looking at screams of regression. And you do not want to be on that side of the regression if it happens. That's it, guys. That's BABIP. That's some hitters to think about acquiring. There's some hitters to think about selling high on. I hope this is the kind of stuff that people are telling me they want to hear. It's a whole show on just a topic, an information that's a little bit more research-based as opposed to players, injuries, and things like that. So that's what I'm trying to keep these midweek shows to. We will talk prospects here in the coming weeks, particularly as we get close to the June first-year player draft. And as we get closer and closer to the call-up of some of these players, and again, Carlos Correa, you got to put him on your team. He's coming up very, very soon. Hit a home run last night, I believe. So there's a lot to like with him. That's it, guys. Feel free to email me, or those who have my email, it's best to post at prospect361.com. Or, of course, use me on the Twitter at RichWilsonFSG, at RichWilsonFSG. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you on Sunday.